And he just got a good spirit about things like this. Anyway, we're still watching, monitoring, and waiting a Vatican statement that we actually expect. Well, it's 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 o'clock here on the East Coast, 4:08. And we're expecting an announcement at some point soon here. Traditionally, they used to announce the Pope's passing at like 6 in the morning in some obscure Vatican radio station, which had been a tradition. Excuse me. So anyway, we're watching. We'll let you know. And I've gone through the process of how they pick a new pope, and it's a rather long, lengthy process. This whole thing goes on for a couple of weeks here, if, in fact, the pope passes away. It'd be a sad day, and he was a real leader. I mean, that's what Pat and I were talking about. Just like Reagan, just like Thatcher, I mean, the pope was right there, standing firm for Catholic theology, for Catholic moral values, not shifting, not changing. Because the culture was changing, the times were changing. Standing and saying,
shut the hell up, Sean Hannity. Talking about how they've gone through the process. You've gone over the process of how they pick out a pope. It's basically get a man who's about 100 years old, looks like a ghost, halfway bald, halfway senile, and then have him garble out brain-dead, vegetative type of nonsense to basically the people who believe in an invisible kingdom, which basically means they are brain-dead and half-vegetative. Then you talk about his moral values. Wait a minute now. Trusting the Catholic Church is like trusting a crack house in your neighborhood. I wouldn't leave my kid alone with any of these Catholic men you call priests any more than I would leave them with a neighborhood pimp. Well, priest, pimp, priest. What's the difference? The pimp pimps you out and gives you crumbs to eat. The priest gives you a waffle-like crumb to eat. Hey, same tradition. You know what time it is, slave time. You're listening to 104.1, 106.1, Illinois, 101.1, Santa Cruz, LUVER.com, the world, radioforall.net, the universe, and click into your Slave Revolt blog by punching in your Google Web Slave Revolt Radio. Tonight, we're going to have to check what's in the shadows of confusion in this Terry Schiavo case. The Schiavo case that is, America is in a vegetative state. So we got all that and a hell of a lot more on 104.1. Slave. Revolt.
Attention, seekers everywhere. I was right. Everything I knew was wrong.
Beyond Dr. Shadow. And tonight, we're about to go into this, Terry Schiavo case. Deal with how American society is basically in a vegetative state. You know, it's kind of like, regardless of your views of, this particular episode concerning one's right to die or the pro-life cause, quote-unquote, etc., the American populace filled with hypocrisy, self-serving lies and distortions, selective guilt and outrage helped stirred up, of course, and propagandized by the corporate media system and those who are tied into this whole bourgeois capital electoral process and state apparatus, has basically left much of this population in a confused, gumpified, vegetative state. We're going to explore this a little bit and deal with how within the shadows of the state, many people have gotten to this place of being all over the map, contradicting themselves and everything else over this issue, and how it connects to our overall fight. First, we're going to start off with Glenn Beck. He's this little conservative hack on 9:10 a.m., the KNAW show. Let's see where he starts his tirade concerning the case with Terry. And then let's take it from there. Check this out.
You can't trust Michael Schiavo's motives here. He's got too much to gain. And the one judge who is constantly for killing Terry Schiavo, shutting that guardian down and saying, you're biased, get a new guardian, who will say the same things I believe, say the same thing Michael Schiavo believes. That's what Congress did. They said, let's take it out of the hands of this judge. Congress demanded, didn't ask for, demanded a new trial de novo. That means from the beginning. That means you stand in a court of law and you no longer have to base your trial on the facts another judge has found. You know, I didn't really understand this. I'm not an attorney. But once one judge finds fact, it becomes fact. And so then every other court, every other judge must look, even if they disagree, must look at those facts that Judge Greer found. And what he found, the biggest fact, was that she wanted to die. All other, you know, they kept hearing, oh, they've heard it 20 times. They've heard it 6 times of the Supreme Court and turned it down. Yes, they did. And why they turned it down is because they looked at a piece of paper from Judge Greer that said, I found that she wanted to die. It was her wish to die. When the jury, or when the judges in all other courtrooms picked up that piece of paper, they said, Judge Greer, while I might disagree with it, Judge Greer found fact that she asked to die. I am not ruling in favor of the parents. That's why Congress and the president flew back into Washington in the middle of the night to say, you must start over again. And the 11th Circuit Court has the balls to lecture us. They have the balls to lecture the President of the United States. Well, let me tell you something, Mr. Judge. And I hope the judges all across America hear my voice and start to hear the voices of the average person in this country. Enough! You're not telling me how to live my life. This is not an oligarchy. That's the new hot word, by the way, oligarchy. It's the new gravitas. Oligarchy means ruled by a few. Yesterday, the 11th Circuit Court of Appeal, and I want to quote them, said, resolving the Schiavo controversy, it is my judgment that despite legislative and executive branches of our government have acted in a manner at odds with our founding fathers' blueprint for the governance of a free people, our Constitution. Wait a minute. Congress and the president acted at odds with our founding fathers' blueprint. Well, let me actually quote one of our founding fathers. At least I think Thomas Jefferson was one of our founding fathers. Thomas Jefferson was ringing the bell against these judges in 1801. Ringing the bell saying, hello, danger ahead. Thomas Jefferson said, quote, he knows of no safe depository of the unlimited powers of the society but with the people themselves. And the power does not belong to a judicial oligarchy. When are our judges going to figure that out?
Now, what's interesting about Vex ranting and stuff is how self-serving this is. When he rambles on about how Congress demanded a new trial, de novo, from the 11th Circuit, which they did. The reason why, in part, these courts have been so and could be so obstinate against that and not have to worry about looking over new facts is tied into their whole war on terrorism, war on drugs, and specifically Prime Bill Clinton's Effective Death Penalty Act, which eradicated the process of reviewing over all of the facts in cases at the discretion of these particular courts. So all one has to do is think of cases like Mumia, where even though much new evidence has come out about Mumia's innocence, you've had a situation where they don't have to review the new evidence. They can consider it and declare it immaterial. And all they'll do is look over to make sure that the procedures that one was giving in a very narrow term, that they didn't violate particular codes and ethics or whatever in that particular hearing. So any new facts, quote unquote, is immaterial. Now, this has always been supported and applauded by these right-wingers who've used every excuse under the sun to try to gut citizens' rights for self-defense trials under the whole argument that we must look out for the victims' rights, the predators have too much power, they have too much leeway, we need to fine-tune this, streamline it, it's costing too much time and money. How much longer and how long should someone be on death row before they're finally put to death, et cetera, et cetera. Now all of a sudden, they're in part handcuffed by laws that they've helped ferment for years. And they're screaming in outrage like Beck in shock that how could this happen? He acts like he's this completely abyss to this whole concept of how the whole judicial system doesn't have to look into what's considered a fact
by another judge in their review process if that judge has already reviewed it and or if that judge has already declared it a fact. Well, many of these same people have used these arguments in the past to neutralize any kind of fair judicial system, which obviously can't be constructed within this whole system, but they try to neutralize any of that because they want to protect the devouring system as it is. So this is this complete hypocrisy. And, you know, talk about Jefferson, you know, some former slave driver, you know, owning 260 plus slaves at one point. I mean, please. I mean, Jefferson was for the privileges of his class, dominant class, elite class, in a similar way that you are. So don't go screaming out all, you know, hell and brimstone now. Now, he also whines that the president flew back and Congress and all of them said, you must start over again. Well, for a long time, you've had, like I mentioned before, states refine their process of review. And if you look, even in states like Texas, not Florida in this case, but Texas, they even have a certain limit on after you've been convicted, you have a certain amount of days to present new evidence. If you don't, then that new evidence is inadmissible. Now, I've gone over this in my commentary, White Justice, Black Misery, The Legal and Illegal Lynching of a People, to expose how this whole process has obviously executed innocent persons, but the courts all the way up to the Supreme Court have declared in many of these cases that since the courts have ruled that the individual has had a fair trial during the first time, the new evidence is irrelevant. And they've lit people out of existence. Where were these pro-lifers, quote-unquote, then? Where was Beck then? Now, next, Beck gives us, and goes into, has America, because of the whole Schiavo case, become a culture of death? Let's check them out.
When can the people not stand up and say, excuse me, there's enough here to look at that maybe we should err on the side of life? Have we become so callous? Have we become the culture of death? The answer is yes. It is official, America. We are now part of the culture of death. You point to the Middle East, you point to the Islamic extremists and say, look at their culture of death. They are strapping bombs to their children. You know what? The people who are strapping bombs to their children in their culture of death, at least their culture of death, they're actually fighting for something. They're fighting for what they believe in. In our culture of death, we just take an easy way out. In our culture of death, I wouldn't want to live that way. I'm sure she wouldn't either. In our culture of death, we no longer have to make these decisions because we've got a guy in Atlanta or a guy in Tampa or a few guys and a chick up in Washington, they'll make that decision for me. I don't have to worry about it.
Now, once again, you can see what Beck is trying to do. He's trying to act like since his constituents have failed in their mission to preserve Shivo's life in this case. This is evidence of America falling into what he calls a culture of death. And says it's because the populace takes the easy way out. You know, I wouldn't want to be in her state, so, you know, I wouldn't mind having the plug pulled, et cetera, et cetera. Now, here's a particular society that has had no problem whatsoever in tasering young kids from the age of 6 to old grandpas in their 70s up and down the streets of America. Where's Beck and these clowns on that? You have rampart divisions. These guys are basically little SS troops in the neighborhoods, framing up, torturing, executing and planting evidence, guns, whatever, on their victims. You have white supremacist death squad cop organizations in places like L.A., Wayside Whiteys, the Cavemen, the Vikings, in Oakland, the Riders, in Richmond, the Cowboys, on and on. These are little punk Nazi type organizations spreading death any and everywhere they could. Mayhem. You have Arab and Muslim detainees being killed in American dungeons, Muhammad Butt and others. Now they're transporting and have been transporting them off to fellow terrorist, torturous country collaborators of theirs for them to help in this process. You've got people dying in Guantanamo. This country is founded off of death, genocide of natives, obliteration of the native populace, and every vehicle that they could think of, that's the programs that they've used. They have a death camp right in Fort Benning, Georgia, the School of the Americas. Right now, they're spreading depleted uranium all over the battlefields, which in the American construct of things means right over the populace in their living quarters in Iraq, which is going to spread a uranium form of death for thousands of years. So for Beck to get up here and now try to ring the alarm bells of despair because of what he quote-unquote realizes about America over the Shivo case is this complete hypocrisy and opportunism. He's trying to manipulate his particular listenership. Now, he also says there's enough evidence, basically, to look at, and things that don't look right, that we should side on the air of caution concerning Shivo's case. And there are contradictions that I'll get into all over the place, but this is because of the whole gumpification and cynical way the whole system is set up in the corporate media, in the judicial process, in the whole congressional Senate, all the way up to Boy George. That it's all filth. It's nothing that you can trust. They have garbage and lies and distortions that all levers of them are trying to manipulate and prostate themselves out for opportunism, for manipulation, etc. So, but the hypocrisy for Beck comes into place where you have a situation where there are over 100 people that bury Sheck and Peter Neufeld have gotten out of prison, and in some cases out of death row, over this whole Innocence Project using DNA to expose the fact that these people have not been the rapists and or killers in cases they've been convicted on. The police, in many of these cases, have been resisting, step by step, any kind of DNA process coming into play where they still have remaining DNA over some of these, over many of these cases. In other words, where they still have like the panties of a woman who was raped 10, 15 years ago, and by that they still have in some cases the DNA, like the semen of the rapist. They fought tooth and nail not to have this DNA be brought to light. They've tried to charge people. They've often destroyed the evidence. They've tried to use all kinds of legal blocks. There's been arguments that they just don't want a free-for-all where everyone is making a claim that they should have their DNA tested, if there's evidence, so on. And so where's the siding with caution? And where were any of these little wretched conservatives on these issues? Where's the siding with caution on Mumia's case, where you have a situation where the known killer has even come out and confessed his participation in the murder of the little cop in Philadelphia that Mumia is accused of? There's no air of caution on trying to hold back the reins and reassess this situation. As a matter of fact, all of these cops and conservatives have their foot smashed down on the pedal of death for Mumia. So, once again, this is just manipulation, self-serving manipulation, distortion, and self-serving anger on this whole issue. Now, Beck, though, gets down to where he feels things need to go concerning this whole rights to decide life or death, who gets to decide it, and he sums it all up, essentially, with where we really get our rights from. And you can see, once again, whatever your position on the whole Schiavo case, as one navigates their way through all of the distortion coming out through all of these sectors, you can see, and you will see, how these right-wingers play their particular cards.
And we began to judge life in our arrogance. In our arrogance, we judged life. We judged a life, whether it was worthy or not, to live. Is there anything more arrogant? I don't create life. Who am I to say that life isn't worth living? I didn't create it. I don't know how to create it. I can't create bad life. I can't create bug life. And yet I sit in judgment on what's worthy and what's not? Is that why we should have cared? Is that what this story is about? Where do we get our rights? Where do our rights really come from? It's in all of our founding documents. Our rights come from God. And where do they go from there? There's only one place. Our rights come from God, and then they go right to the people. It doesn't seem to be the system anymore, does it? Our rights aren't coming from God. And they're not going to the people. When it comes to life and death, in this decision, it seems as though our rights come from doctors, come from our spouse, and then they go to the courts. I know firsthand doctors are wrong. I see, I don't put doctors into the God category. A lot of people do, and I think a lot of people need to, want to. A lot of people, they want to think of doctors as God because they need that hope. I don't get my hope from man. I don't get my my hope from doctors. I get my hope from something much bigger than a doctor, a hospital, a procedure, an individual, a group of people. I get my hope from God, the same place I get my rights. And the reason why I get my hope there is because that's where it belongs. I've had a doctor tell me before, your daughter's not going to feed herself. Your daughter's not going to be able to walk. She's not going to be able to talk. You know what? The doctors were wrong. But I would expect that from a doctor because they're only man.
Now you can see what's happening and how this whole thing and how it gets manipulated by these vultures. First, you know, people have heard me go into this whole religion stuff. And as I've said, dealing with religion is, in essence, should be just an open forum like anything else for radicals. Because, in essence, religion is a man-made construct. Whether one believes in the invisible kingdom or not, everything that we have to deal with on the ground is human-made. The churches, the synagogues, the mosques, they're all built by humans. The hierarchical structure, the imams, the clerics, the rabbis, the popes, the priests, they're all human beings. They have certain special privileges because they are supposed to have, within the hierarchical order, because it's a hierarchical setup, they have a higher position within these particular orders because of their positioning within the whole frame-up of the invisible man believers for their respective religions. And these have human implications, their decisions that they make, their interpretations of these particular books that were just written by other humans, regardless of the fact that they say that it was words from one invisible man or another or whatever the case, human beings wrote these things. The expansion of their influence and power goes with the expansion of the land that these people are on and the states that are within the influence of, you know, Islam, Christian, Hebron, whatever. So with that in mind, these are human-made constructions, and in the same way that we critique other economic, social, political, philosophical orders, these are, you know, same thing. So when you hear someone like Beck tie in where we get our rights from, and then says we get them from God, then you can see that this is basically a political move. These are political maneuverings by these types of hocus-pocus right-wing reactionary believers. And if these words of God tie into how one deals with life-death issues, or, in his opinion, should, then, of course, that's a political process. So, this is how these guys use these invisible man beliefs to manipulate issues, human issues, in our time. Now, he goes into, and keep in mind this whole God stuff, who am I to say who can live? Now, this is the same individual who's pro this U.S. imperialist war in Iraq. Well, by supporting this imperial intervention, you are supporting an instrument of death that made and is making a decision on the lives of human beings, and has made a decision, a conscious decision, that for their particular cause, certain people, innocent or not, are going to have to die for their cause. Everyone knew and everyone knows, when you go into these types of imperialist wars, there is going to be collateral damage. In other words, innocent people killed. Regardless, never mind the fact of this illegal invasion, the hocus-pocus stuff that they've used to justify the invasion, that all being a fraud, no weapons of mass destruction, etc., etc. Now, I'm not even getting into all of that aspect. Scumbags like Beck knew that to support this imperial intervention into Afghanistan and Iraq, you are going to have innocent people who are going to get killed. Innocent women, children, babies, etc. But he took a position, like many of his other compatriots and listeners, that for the quote-unquote overall good of their interpretation or claim of a war on terrorism, etc., etc., this was an acceptable result. That was him deciding, and his little followers, on life and death. So now, to act like one's soul is cleansed over this Schiavo case is complete opportunism and hypocrisy. So he screams on and on, and then plays this whole thing that I don't put doctors in the God category, and so on and so forth. Look, no one's saying, well, you do have some people who depend on doctors for their lives, and by that they have great hope and faith. You know, if someone gets into a serious car accident and they're in surgery, and their kids inside having surgery, and the doctor comes up, of course that person is going to have a lot of hope that the doctor is going to be able to help their kid in that type of situation and stuff. It doesn't mean automatically that someone's putting them in a God category. It's just that people will recognize that these particular people have a certain expertise, and that this is an emergency type of situation that hopefully could be resolved, and it's not basically going to be resolved by a plumber. So, you know, this is just him trying to manufacture this whole construct once again for his particular cause. So when he goes into this whole thing about being so shocked, is there anything more, you know, shocking about this whole thing and all of that, about someone deciding over life and death, when all of these guys are death penalty advocates and hardcore evidence has come out about it's more than one out of every 10 persons who's convicted and put on death row is actually innocent. So it's not like these guys don't know this type of stuff. They know that even in the whole construct of quote-unquote who's convicted of capital punishment, that you have some people who are completely innocent. Now, this is not even getting into the fact of how selective the whole capital punishment system is. But what's also interesting about Beck is that, you know, on his show, he was talking about, and he's been following this case for a while. He at one time tried to buy off Michael Schiavo. He helped raise $7 million. Him and many of his constituents got all this money together, and they wanted Michael Schiavo to basically just leave, take the $7 million, and leave the care in Terry's parents' hands. Now, one has to ask, if he feels that Michael Schiavo is a murderer, like he's often declared him to be, or an advocate of murder and so on and so forth, why would this rough and tumble right winger buy this type of brute, quote unquote, off? Isn't that coddling someone that him and his inklings and followers think is a brute? And isn't that a contradiction? So why wouldn't they try and insist upon putting him in jail? I mean, these are the people who scream out law and order. Well, see, this kind of undermines and underlines something that's really going on. These cats really don't have faith overall in the criminal justice system, being a justice system that really works in a justifiable way. They know that it's prone to manipulation, it's prone to the whims of particular classes and flows of time and so on and so forth. And in this particular case, many of them find themselves the odd person out. So they're not even going through, he's not even going through this pretext. Someone who feels that Michael Schiavo is as criminally involved as Beck feels he is in a way. He's manipulated this process, has done some things to Terry, etc., etc. Where is his insistence that the criminal justice system work? It's because he knows it's all a fraud. It works where basically it's supposed to work. On the poor, on the indigent, on, you know, the helpless, etc., etc. Now, Beck and his likes defend it to the core when it is mourning over the defenseless. The defenseless that they wanted to mow over. But since it's not working out in the construct that they wanted to in this particular case, they don't even put up the pretense of believing in the justice system this time. Which gets into some of the other irony and hypocrisy that's going on. Because now, let's go into O'Reilly. Now, O'Reilly in this case is trying to cover his corporate tracks by saying there's no winners, all losers in this Schiavo case. Let's see what he means and let's take it from there.
Hi, I'm Bill O'Reilly. Thanks for watching us tonight. There are no winners in the Schiavo case. That is the subject of this evening's Talking Points memo. Terry herself will soon be dead. We pray she'll have eternal peace in the afterlife. Her parents and siblings have lost their struggle in a very painful and public way. They can't be feeling good about any of this. Michael Schiavo is forever demonized in the eyes of millions of people, although he'll probably write a book. His image is in tatters. The Right to Life movement has been damaged because some of its supporters have gone overboard, telling people with whom they disagree to rot in hell, things like that. Right to Life folks will never be able to persuade if they are seen as hateful fanatics. That's what their opponents want, shrill rather than thoughtful rhetoric. The secular movement is lost because it seems to want Terry Schiavo to die. Why do they care if Terry's parents want her alive and will care for her? What's the downside of that? Since independent guardians have ruled that Michael Schiavo's contention Terry wanted to die is compromised, no third party will ever know what Terry wanted. There is no certainty here. So for the secularists to come out and root for her death puts them in a brutal position. They lose big. The media is lost because no matter what side you take, millions will dislike that conclusion, and if you don't have an opinion, you come off as a zombie who doesn't care. Few are winning any new converts in the media. The judges, politicians, and clergy are in the same position. Whatever judgments they make, people will hate them for it. That's why the Democratic senators simply vanished when the bill was put before them. But running away from a huge issue like this looks like cowardice. Again, they all lose. Talking Points has never seen a story quite like this one, where there are simply no winners at all. But that's the case, and that's the memo.
See, there's no winners when you believe in the system. All of these guys are operating within the matrix of this whole corporate, judicial, market order. So they're trapped. They're trapped and contradicted by all the lies and spins that have been put out on this particular issue. But see, O'Reilly wants it both ways. First, he's whining and semi-embarrassed about the Right to Lifers going overboard and how they're getting labeled and posing themselves as hateful fanatics. Now, it is kind of interesting. I saw MSNBC, when you had a lot of the protesters out there, some of the religious right protesters, one of them had the American flag upside down with something spray painted on it. So here, these are the type of people who are usually the most vocal when they see someone desecrating the flag. But all of a sudden, something's not going in the way that they want, and they're just acting out. And it's also kind of ironic, on the real, not this junk that O'Reilly's saying, that many of these right-to-lifers have put out death threats on everyone under the sun who they've seen or been opponents to on this issue. Michael Schiavo put out death threats on him, on his new wife or whatever she is that, you know, he has a couple of kids by. Death threats on her. On the judge that ruled against having the tube put back into Terry. Death threat on him. Now, he's a religious conservative, and actually he got kicked out of his own hocus-pocus religious church for his decision. Now, at the same time, these conservatives and right-to-lifers were screaming that Jeb Bush or someone should just storm in there and just take her and start to resuscitate her before she had died. Now, these are the same people who scream for law and order. And this is some of the which obviously they don't really believe in. It's just the order, the new world order-ish that they believe in. And if those laws happen to get in their way, well, they'll kick it to the curb. Just like someone's right to life, when that gets into their way concerning death penalty and so on and so forth, if it's the desirable disposables, well, they'll kick those rights to life away and help pull that lever. So, you're dealing with all these elements that are full of hypocrisy. But of course, O'Reilly tries to spin it off, saying that the secular movement wants Terry to die. You know, like you have all these people wanting her to die who are not hypnotized by some invisible man. This is this sick, cynical talk. But then he gets into something quite revealing, because he goes how the media loses no matter what side they take. If the media doesn't take whatever stand they take, you're going to have an element of the population that is against them because of that stand. Well, that kind of exposes something. What is this corporate media doing taking a stand anyway? What, see, this exposes the fact that they are a particular activist type. So they were in the beginning catering to the religious right, not on any principled ground, because they didn't do their groundwork. And Nat Hentoff, who has done a lot of research on this and has actually been following the cases for a while, for years, he exposes that there is a lot of hypocrisy and cynical stuff that has gone on with Michael Scivo, with Greer, the judge, with the judicial process, et cetera, et cetera. But this helps expose that the whole process is corroded and corrupt. But the corporate media, they didn't get into it to expose the corruption of the judicial process, because the corporate media, for the most part, is there to reinforce the power and the moral fortitude of the judicial process within America. They're there to reinforce that the judicial system has a moral higher ground. So they generally don't want to attack the judicial system. They want to try to pretend that this is a bastion of where justice does pervade, and where this is a nation of laws that you can count on to protect your basic rights. But Hentoff has been writing stuff and showing that this stuff has been corroded. Like, people have been writing and exposing that the whole judicial process is corroded in many ways. But the corporate media has been ignoring that, in the same way that they've been ignoring the intricate details in the Scivo case. So they basically played this similar type of partisan corporate politics that they typically play, catering to the right, catering to the religious right, so on and so forth. Not looking at the facts per se on the ground, but they saw that these people were playing the card for their particular cause. So they catered to this type of stuff. But when O'Reilly says that the media is loses because no matter what side they take, and what he's talking about is if they take the right to life, quote unquote, side, they lose by a certain portion of the population. And if they were to take the side of what has been described as a right to die, then you would have a large portion of the population against them. What this exposes, without O'Reilly saying, is that they really have no business taking any sides. If they were a healthy media system, which of course they're not and can't be, they would just be reporting the facts on the ground, going to guys like Hentoff to flesh out the details and exposing the whole process as it is. But they're not there to honestly expose the facts on the ground. They have their own agenda. So O'Reilly exposes himself just by what he says. So he considers that if the media doesn't take a side, they come off zombie-ish, as if all they did were report soundly the facts, that would be zombie-ish. So he's exposing the fact that he's just basically an activist corporate henchman. So this deals with the whole mindset that O'Reilly and others come with in the corporate media spectrum, that you must pick a side, you must cater to a side, not be quote-unquote effective components of this operation within the society. So they cater to the Christian right, like they typically cater to the right in general. Now, they were doing this to play into this whole moral majority type of thing, and to play into the cultural war aspect. Now, when I say that, think in terms of how O'Reilly has covered the whole Boy Scout stuff, and how he's played the whole moral majority culture war, you know, no gays in the Boy Scouts, et cetera, et cetera. They should have the right. See, he's playing this whole thing and has been an advocate of that. But the contradiction that the corporate media found themselves in on this particular situation was that they have many right-wing people who are not right-wing Christians, but are just right-wingers who are for law and order and do not like to see the court being challenged in the way that it is. Now, the Christian right, who also plays the law and order card, you know, like Beck and all of that, but when they saw that the court was not working for them in this particular situation, then they were chucking the quote-unquote law and order of the courts and attacking it, and then bringing down their God to say that this is what should be the guiding light to override. So this is how O'Reilly saw himself and his other compatriots caught in a bind. They're so used to picking sides and it being cleaner than a particular situation and dynamic that this turned out to be. But they've had a split in consensus that they often cater to amongst the right. Scarborough had on Chris Hitchens, and Christopher Hitchens was fighting with Pat Buchanan and Scarborough. Now, generally, they all get along fine nowadays, but Hitchens was upset about the Christian right not obeying and bowing down to the law and order God of the state, where Pat Buchanan was, of course, displeased how the law and order state apparatus failed in this particular case for him and his constituencies. So they were playing the God card. So all of them are just basically caught up in their own contradiction and fighting amongst themselves. But next, let's listen to how O'Reilly painfully and pitifully tries to explain this episode through this whole conservative liberal lens. So check it out.
All right, one of the big battles over this Schiavo case is that the Christian right primarily, and other people who don't fit that description but who sympathize with the Schindler family and Terry Schiavo's right to live, they don't like the law. They don't like the law in Florida, which says that the spouse is the authority figure in making decisions when there is a question about whether somebody will be kept alive by medical means other than standard medical means. So this would be, a feeding tube would be extraordinary for 15 years. I think everybody would understand that and agree with that. So they don't like the law. All right? They don't like the abortion law. They don't like partial birth and abortion law. They don't like it. And they want to change it. Well, that's fine. You know, that's what the country is. Try to change the laws if you don't like them. Try to get people in Congress to change the law. Now, the left does the same thing. But the left's tactic is different. Because they know, as America evolves, that it's going to be way too many years before the progressive secularists take control of the country. They're not going to do it. There are far more traditional conservatives than progressive secular liberals. Far more. 2 to 1. So what the left wants to do is get judges to make the laws for them, going around Congress, going around the state legislatures. Now, we're going to give you a couple examples. Schiavo case is a very big example of that, okay? That you've got laws in place, and the Schiavo law was, the judge did the right thing. It's been litigated within an inch of absurdity. Everybody says the judge didn't make any mistakes. He did the right thing. And it's true. In a couple of other cases, you have the left defying the law. Now, the right didn't defy the law here. I mean, only the crazy nuts on talk radio are saying, well, let's seize the woman from the hospice and let's go in there. I mean, there are a few of those people, but, you know, they're not taken seriously in any quarter. The left, however, the gay marriage thing is a perfect example. I mean, the mayor of San Francisco basically said, well, even though the people voted directly here on a proposition and overwhelmingly said we want marriage to be defined between one man and one woman, even though that happened, I, Gavin Newsom, am going to marry people, and I don't care. Anarchy, right there in that. Well, the California court stopped him and said, no, you can't do that, and we all know what happened. Marijuana legalization, this is really interesting. There is a move by the secular progressives whose philosophy is an overarch philosophy of make no judgments about personal behavior. You got to understand that. The Christian right philosophy is make all kinds of judgments about personal behavior, and the progressive left is make no judgments about it. So you've got the right position that we judge all day long. This is a sin, you're going to hell, blah, blah, blah. And on the other side, it's no, nothing's wrong, do your own thing, as long as you don't hurt anybody else. And their definition of hurting other people is far different from mine. I mean, the far left will tell you that a homosexual exposition in Castro Street isn't hurting children who see it. They'll tell you that. And I'll that's insane. They'll tell you that a drug addict putting a needle in his arm in Central Park while teenagers watch doesn't hurt the teenagers. That's what they'll say. That's insane. So, those of us who are rational, clear, fair-minded people know you got craziness on both sides.
All right, so you can see what O'Reilly is shamelessly trying to do. He's setting up this whole dynamic that's similar to Crossfire. You know, the whole left-right side type of thing. Even though both sides that he's talking about, essentially, believe in the state, believe in the system. You know, one side may be more prone to vote for Kerry or Democrats. The other side may be more prone to vote for Republicans, et cetera, et cetera. But they're still caught within the prism of the whole state apparatus. So, O'Reilly trying to go on and on about saying the left, depending on activist judges, to get what they want. And all he's basically doing is trying to get people to stay within the whole box of this particular argument and relieve himself of the complicity of confusing the population at hand on these particular issues. You know, in November 10th, 2003, in the Village Voice, Hentoff wrote this whole article about the whole Skybo thing. The article is called "Lying About Terry Skybo," and in part of it, he deals with this whole right to die cases that he puts in quotes. And in part, he says that quote, for 13 years, Terry Skybo has not been able to speak for herself, but she is not brain dead, not in a comatose state, not terminal, and not connected to a respirator. If the feeding tube is removed, she will starve to death. Whatever she may or may not have said, did she consider food and water artificial means? The media continually reports that Terry is in a persistent vegetative state, and a number of neurologists and bioethicists have more than implied to the press that persistent, quote unquote, is actually synonymous with permanent, unquote. This is not true. As I shall factually demonstrate in upcoming columns, I will also provide statements from neurologists who say that if Terry were given the proper therapy denied to her by her husband and guardian after he decided therapy was becoming too expensive despite $750,000 from a malpractice suit, she could learn to eat by herself and become more responsive. Terry is responsive beyond mere reflexes. Having this degree of syntax, if she is starved to death, she will not die in peace, quote-unquote, as the New York Times predicts in an uninformed October 23rd editorial supporting the husband. What happens to someone who can feel pain during the process of starvation is ghastly. Increasingly, New York Times editorials are not as indicative of conscious liberal bias, quote unquote, as they are of ignorance or denial of the facts, as I have demonstrated in my series on Judge Charles Pickering. Let me stop right there. The reason why I mention this is that Hentoff has time and time again in a number of the articles and things that he has written over the years exposed that there are a lot of inconsistencies. But see, the corporate media and people like O'Reilly have done what they typically have done. Don't think about the Schiavo case. Just think about 9/11, for instance. How they have ignored the facts on the ground concerning the inconsistencies to the state's claim on the 9/11 case. And you can see how this process will play itself out. But then they found themselves catering to a particular populace that is not really all that concerned with Terry. They were just playing their particular card, their God card, for their particular issues. So the corporate media catered to that in the same way that the politicians did, you know, like Tom DeLay. So let's hear Tom DeLay get into the mix.
If we do not act, she will die of thirst. However helpless, Mr. Speaker, she is alive. She is still one of us. And this cannot stand. That act of barbarism can be and must be prevented.
So the only one out of everybody that knows her.
So here you have DeLay getting in, and his compatriots got into this whole thing not because they gave a damn about Terry Skybo. It was basically because they were catering to a particular portion of their constituents and thought that they can get some mileage out of it. But then you had the case basically be defined as, do people and their spouses have a right to decide when or when not to pull the plug on one another?
And from that particular construct, 75% of the population said, that they should have, you know, that people should have a right. Where 82% said that Congress should not be involved in this, and that they felt it was opportunism. So then you had them scampering because they jumped into something that they thought they could get mileage out of, not because they were concerned about the inconsistencies that people like Hentoff had brought up over the years. It's just because they were being opportunists for their particular cause. And then, but the media had done such a good job in not carrying the case or exposing the case to corporate media overall, that it's all convoluted concerning people's interpretation of the case. So you have a situation where an honest discussion about right to life and one's right to decide how much care they want is not really in the fold. I mean, this is the same society, society that is making drastic cutbacks on health care, that it has 40 million people without any kind of health insurance program at all. There's no right to life movement that is attached to these right wingers who are out there with their little signs. They're not a part of that because they're not concerned with that form of true human collective right to life, right to proper health care. Boy George passed into law this whole affordability form of a right to life. And you recently had a little kid who had basically the plugs pulled on him, not because a little black baby, not because the mother wanted it done. She did not want the plugs pulled on this little kid. But basically, they couldn't afford it. So those of us who advocate a true form of right to life, which is connected to the struggles of working class people in this country, the health care situation, the migrant workers who are working out in fields and being doused with pesticides, the Iraqi kids that are being doused with depleted uranium, the people of Darfur who are being genocided away by another form of tyrannical Christopher Columbus's with turbans on, you know, that type of right to life, they're not down with. So you have these contradictory things. So Tom DeLay, who actually had with his family the plug pulled on his own father, he feels that people, at least his type of people from his type of class, have the right to make that decision. But I don't want to say that in the case of Michael Schiavo, because I think that there's other elements going on. But in general, he's not someone who's an advocate of a right to life like he claims, because he's part of an apparatus that is not really down with people having a right to live healthy. But at this point in the whole episode, you started to have conservatives jump ship or basically try to maintain their states' rights law and order concept. And what law and what order, God's order, should really mean, never mind
the fact. The only one out of everybody that knows her.
And what I mean by this, at a certain point, this is on 9:10 a.m., that KNEW, the same station that Beck is on. Now you started to hear callers this is before Terry died, fighting with some of their hosts that they're usually in lockstep with, because now some of the hosts were starting to say, this is what the law decided, the courts have decided, we should just go with that. But the religious right was still pushing on their own particular agenda. So you started to have a clash of the rights.
The four family members, the ones that he was only married to her for 4 years.
So?
Yet you would have us think that this is the only altruistically motivated individual involved here. Yet her father, mother, brother, and sister, the only ones that could be argued that wouldn't have a conflict of interest. Which this man, I don't even know why.
Wait a minute, why don't they have a conflict of interest? They're her parents.
What could possibly be their gain?
What's his quote gain?
Well, I honestly believe that this man is out to fight these parents.
No. What is his gain?
Why he wants to have her cremated?
What is his gain?
To Pennsylvania.
What is his gain?
What's that?
You haven't answered my question. What is his gain?
His game is, I actually believe that he wants to spite her parents.
All this.
They grew up in 93.
And you know why they did?
An example of your bias.
And you know why they did?
You accept his.
You know why they did?
His answer to what happened in
you
that.
You know why they had a blow up? You want to read Judge Greer's order?
Read it. I don't even give a crap about Judge Greer. This
don't you want to read? Don't you want to learn?
This girl's life once.
Don't you want to learn about this, Theo?
This guy has erred on the side of getting her dead.
Theo.
In every single...
Theo, don't you want to know the truth? Seriously, don't you really want to know?
If the facts you're going to give me are like the facts that you've given earlier, no thanks.
You mean you don't want here to hear anything that conflicts with your version of the facts?
No, I think you're the one that's that way.
No. What you're saying is you don't want to hear anything. So let me get this straight. Let me get this straight, Theo. All this is about, for 15 years, this battle has been motivated and built, and correct me if I'm wrong, according to you, because of Michael Schiavo's fight against the Schindlers?
I think that's a recent motivation. I think.
What was the initial one?
I think initially he may have been motivated by the money.
What
there
money?
There was money to be had early on.
What money? No, there wasn't.
Yes, there was.
No, there wasn't.
Where did Philos get all his legal bills paid for? $400,000.
So he wants to get... He had never had any access to her money or any money that she received by virtue of the settlement or the verdict.
Go to the website and look at the money that has been paid out to legal help on this case.
Theo, he wants to kill his wife to get this supposed pot of gold from someplace. So that he could pay the lawyer to help kill his wife.
No, I think originally there was more to be had. Now there's not.
So he wasn't entitled to that.
I just think that he wants to stick it to this family.
You're making this up.
No, I'm not.
There you are.
What else could be his motivation? The guy,
Theo, what do you know about it? Give me something better.
Let's talk honest, all right? I'm married.
Try it for one.
My wife now for 7 years.
Wonderful.
There may have been a time when we have been watching a movie the way they say that they were, or he said.
No, it wasn't a movie. It was the grandmother's funeral.
Well, whatever.
Theo, don't make this stuff. Theo, stop lying. Theo, stop lying. Stop lying, all right?
Now you can see what's happening. These conservative hosts and listeners are so used to not really checking out the information for themselves, objectively analyzing it, and not coming with their prescribed agenda, that they're caught in their own confusion about the whole case. Neither one really knows all the facts on the ground, because one, the host is trying to maintain a less distrust into trust the court system, the law and order. The other's trying to push this whole religious type thing of the scenario. So he's not trusting in this particular case the law and order ruling, where they typically do. But now that it's not working out for them, they're fighting amongst themselves. Now when they're generally, the host, all he has to do is say, look, a judge ruled this way, and all of the conservatives fall in line, like if it's a Mumia case, and they'll complain about anyone not conforming to the laws of the land, not subjugating their basic humanity to the laws of the land. But the religious right is pulling the other way in this particular case, and now they're pulling out their God card. So both of these misinformed, confused buffoons on this 910 KNEW show are just basically battling each other and half going at it with the half facts and stuff, showing their whole perpetual state of confusion that these cats have spun themselves in, and how pathetic this whole process really became. Now, and you heard of the caller say, I'm not interested in, you know, looking over these facts. You know, this shows, exposes how the whole thing just molasses itself into this whole dynamic. But now, in the midst of all these conservatives being thrown into a confused state, they start fighting amongst themselves and anyone else on the television programs also. Check.
Making that point, you represent the people of your district. A recent poll found that 4 out of 5 people described as evangelicals and conservatives disapprove of congressional intervention. Where's your mandate to get back involved here?
Well, I think we have a constitutional mandate, and when someone who is so vulnerable, so at risk, in this case, as a woman...
You don't have a constitutional mandate. The judiciary takes care of that, and the judiciary is focused.
We take an oath, and we, you know, the 14th Amendment, I believe, is being abridged here. The due process, the right to life, and equal protection under the law. That's being compromised here. This woman has not had her own legal counsel. She has not been able... Her husband, since 1994, has been trying to no longer give her the nourishment, the kind of rehabilitation services that she needs. That's when he did a change of heart, back in 1994.
Congresswoman Wasserman Schultz, does Congress have a reason, a place to get back involved here?
Congress has absolutely no business in getting involved in the middle of this personal family tragedy, and we would be only adding insult to injury if we take it that much further and start to try to expand our involvement into thousands of families, family disputes and tragedies. We have got to make sure that we allow the processes for end-of-life decisions that have been set up in each individual state, from as unique to Oregon, to Texas, and to Florida, to go through the normal process with a court review when there is a dispute, and not jam ourselves in between family members on every personal tragic decision. And we also have to stop the hyperbole and the politicizing of this case, which is exactly what people like Congressman Smith
have
been doing.
Well, let me just say,
no, excuse me, excuse me.
What
you've been doing, Congressman
Smith,
I didn't talk over you. I did not talk over you.
Let the Congressman finish. Go ahead.
What people like Congressman Smith have been doing is politicizing this issue. They have been exaggerating and saying things like doctors have said that she's not in a persistent vegetative state. The only physicians that have said she's not in a persistent vegetative state are those that have only examined her via videotape. The doctors that have been court-appointed
have correct.
To both of you, I don't want to relitigate all of it. I don't want to relitigate all of this.
Okay, so once again, you see that... they're just throwing things around. They're both, all of these guys are opportunists. And that's in part how you have to look at the core of this situation. Jesse Jackson running down there for opportunistic reasons. The way Congress rushed in and Boy George flew back like he's concerned about one individual's life, et cetera, et cetera. It was all for their own opportunistic panderings and reasons. But the little liberals saw that that it was just best for them to kind of stay back for the most part and let these guys just kind of bash themselves out and watch the media challenge some of their little conservative friends about, you know, hey, don't you think there's a constitutional mandate that's already been set? So this once again exposed the whole dynamic that these people were caught in concerning the whole law and order construct and how people are supposed to fall in line to the law and order. But, of course, as I mentioned before, the conservatives don't want to, or the religious right doesn't want to in this particular situation because it doesn't serve their purpose, because they're opportunists. They don't believe in all this law and order unless it serves their particular cause. Just like in the same construct that they're not really for states' rights except for the apparatus of state control. Now, we heard these same types scream that Congress should get involved. That's what one of the things, that Boy George should get involved, that the override the laws and decisions that were being made in Florida, that Jeb Bush should just come in and extract the woman out. In other words, violate the state's law. These are the same people that scream for states' rights all the time, not wanting the federal government to come in and override, quote unquote, their sacred states' rights. But just like it was a hoax during the slavery game, because it was the same South that called and put into law the Fugitive Slave Act. The Fugitive Slave Act was a federal law that overrode states' laws. So if you were harboring someone who was a former slave in a free state, that Fugitive Slave Act could extract that person from that free state and bring them back to the slave state, i.e. violating the state's rights of the free slave state. So the South, who was the one who implemented and pushed to get the Fugitive Slave Law into act into order, they don't believe in states' rights, they believe in slavery. And they use any means to sanction slavery, just like they use any means to sanction their particular policies in order, just like in this particular case. So all of these hypocrites talking about their concern for this particular case, when the healthcare system doesn't work. It clearly doesn't work. And that means that many people do not have a right to life. The judicial system does not work. So many people do not have a right to due process, and that can translate and often does to a right to life. But to help evaporate any of the confusion that the right has, here's Michael Savage snorting from his 9:10 a.m. station also at 3 p.m. on the day of Terry's death. Savage starts off attacking Bill O'Reilly, you know, who he calls a leprechaun, you know, because he's Irish, for waffling on the issue and going on his normal rant and being mad at the world. So let's check out Savage.
People who fed your sick ego. You know what? I don't want to be on your show, Leprechaun. Forget about it. I'm telling the publicist not even to talk to your people. I don't want to be on your stinking show on Fox. I heard what happened during this thing. I'll never forget what happened during this event. Never. Never. I'll never forget. I saw the true nature of people in the media, in government, in politics, and outside during this Terry Schiavo case. And I know you did, too. And I was steps ahead of everybody, as I am today. I warned you that they were going to do an autopsy with one of their plants, one of their stooges in Alligator County down there. I told you that you should have moved into the courts and stopped that. What's Jeb Bush going to do? Give the boo-hoo face again and say he has no power? They should bring in an out-of-state forensic pathologist and not let one of the hacks controlled by the judge in that rotten county, all one and the same in this man's view. You've got an interlocking rotten group down there, from the hospice to the judge to the state house to the courthouse to the outhouse to the autopsy house. I've never seen anything like it. What I saw, what this one man saw, one man's opinion, if you don't mind, was a group of people getting away with murder and laughing about it. I've never seen anything like this. Now, to add insult to injury, they don't let the parents go into the room as she's dying. And that rat piece of scum lawyer, that's right, That guy, George Felon, is a rat of the lowest order. I've seen bad lawyers. I've never seen a lower lawyer than this George Felon. And we're going to open up the microphones to you today on the Savage Nation on many different questions. But I'm telling you again, it's a sham autopsy to make certain that they can get away with murder right down to the end. He's going to have her cremated. Then he's not even going to give the parents ashes. This is a man you think had love for Terry? That's an idea of your idea. That's your idea. All you women, you smart women, you feminists who don't know anything. This is your idea of a loving husband, you idiots. Where were the women in America? Where was Sean Penn? Where was Sean Penn? Where was the Saran Wrap? Where were all of the bleeding heart liberals of Hollywood? I didn't see one of them. Barbara Streisand was washing her brassieres somewhere in Manhattan. Sean Penn was doing what? The man who flew to Baghdad to smell the alleys before the invasion. What was he sniffing while Terry lay dying? All of the bleeding heart liberals. Susan Sarandon, invisible. That boy husband of hers, whose name I forget, not even a man enough to marry her, just living with her. Not a full man enough to marry that Saran Wrap. Where was he, the bleeding heart liberal? The bleeding heart liberals were nowhere. You know why? They didn't have a drop of blood for a truly handicapped, truly innocent woman. And I told you why. I saw it weeks ago. I figured it out right off the top, right out of the gate. They saw something more than Terry. They were protecting the abortion racket. And now they have admitted it. They were protecting the abortion racket that they are deeply committed to. They are also protecting the organ racket that they are deeply committed to. They are also protecting the stem cell research racket that they're all deeply committed to. They didn't give a rat's behind about this handicapped girl who was done in and then destroyed by them. So the next time you see Susan Sarandon or her boyfriend, and I really don't know his name, or Sean Penn or one of the other phonies in Hollywood give you a speech about immigrants or a speech about the homeless or a speech about gays, you know what you tell them if you near them? Where were you when Terry lay dying, you rat phony, you? Get away from my face. Now, George Bush, by the way, has the lowest ratings of his career, rightly so. He rightly does have the lowest ratings because he's failed everybody. George Bush was hated by the liberals to begin with. He had only one core audience, and he spit in their face. He spit in their face. George Bush tried to be a man for all seasons, and he wound up being a man for no seasons. His brother Jeb, they thought, was protecting his future by not doing the right thing here, and he has no future in politics, as far as I can tell. Congress is in a PVS. We have found out that Congress is in a permanent vegetative state, but of course we already knew that. I am going to play for you in a while a press conference so-called held by the lawyer George Felon, and I couldn't believe what I was listening to. Not one question was asked of him as he continued to slaver one lie on top of the other, in my estimation. Slavering, and each time he told a bigger lie, his tongue licked left to right. I'm an expert at this. I don't need a lie detector test. I don't need sodium pentothal. I can see it. I can smell it. I can hear it. He was getting away with it, and he loved every second of it. God sees the truth but waits. God sees the truth but waits. That's all I can say, George Felon and Michael Chavo. God sees the truth but waits.
All right, so there's old Savage yapping on and on. And you can see some of the dynamics of what he tries to do. First, he's trying to vilify certain groups while he's saying there's a group of people getting away with murder and laughing about it. You know, so he's painting, quote unquote, the little liberals as being gleeful about this whole episode. Now, concerning death, you know, the person who I saw gleeful, not about the Schiavo case, was Boy George when that woman who was about to be executed when he was governor in Texas pleaded to him not to have her executed. And a reporter asked a boy what she said, and Boy mimicked and mocked her, saying, "Please don't kill me," saying that that's what she said. She was executed. So this was someone this gleefully being cavalier about someone's life as a governor. So this is where you see people playing that game. And Savage knows this. He's just, you know, playing his little Savage role. But then he tries to spin it also that Terry was done in and destroyed by them, meaning the liberals and stuff. Where basically, you've had liberals, conservatives, and all those in between. They're trying to find justice within this system, within the courts, within the elective branch, the congressional branch. They're trying to find it up in heaven. They're trying to find it everywhere except on the class level where it belongs. And the solidarity within that whole class construct. So, of course, they're being defecated on. Their minds are being defecated and confused by the corporate media. They're being manipulated and prostrated out by opportunistic politicians. They're being confused by their little parasitic ambassadors to the invisible kingdoms. They're clerics, they're popes, they're priests, they're preachers. You know, Randall Terry and all these other pro-death advocates, if it's the right type of advocating death upon. So they're wallowing around in this filth, and they're being confused on these types of topics. That there is and should be a strong, vibrant health right to life movement, but it's rooted in our class struggle, and that we're not going to get any justice within, and you can't look for justice within this system. So Savage goes on and says that Boy George failed everyone. And that he spit in their faces, talking about the religious right, basically. The reality is that Boy George and them realize that the hocus pocus people really have nowhere to go. They can talk all that type of stuff, and even if they don't vote for one candidate or another, they're still locked within the system. They still believe at the end of the day in the system. A death order that's so ruthless that, you know, when you hear Savage talk about, you know, what has happened to this country and all of that. Look, quote, in a Massachusetts school, 73 disabled children were spoon-fed radioactive isotopes along with their morning oatmeal. In an upstate New York hospital, an 18-year-old woman, believing she was being treated for pituitary disorder, was injected with plutonium by Manhattan Project doctors. At a Tennessee prenatal clinic, 829 pregnant women were served vitamin cocktails, quote-unquote, in truth, drinks containing radioactive iron as part of their prenatal treatment. In 1945, the seismic power of the atomic bomb energy was already well known to researchers, but the effects of radiation on human beings were not. Fearful that plutonium would cause a cancer epidemic amongst workers, Manhattan Project doctors embarked on a human experiment that was as chilling as it was closely guarded. This is from the book, The Plutonium Files. This wretched society has had its experience and game plan going on in this order for years. This is nothing new. So when you hear Savage try to tie it up saying God sees the truth, but wait, he's basically talking some holy crusade rhetoric that God is going to basically be the judgment on those who sided against Shivo, and that this is a wink to those who align themselves with that, that you too can pass this judgment and make an action. But next, here's Nat Hentoff, who's written about the case and some of the problems stirred up by the corporate media. So let's see how he deals with it and go on. Check it out.
The opinion, two of them said, It is fully within Congress's power to dictate standards of review for federal courts. Indeed, if Congress cannot do so, the fate of hundreds of federal statutes would be called into question. And I'm sure you all remember that during the Civil Rights period, when the state courts were conducting malfeasance, it was only the federal courts that intervened. Now, you ask where I stand now. I've been covering the disability rights beat for many years. This is a disability rights case, much more than a right to die case. One of the areas in which the media in all of its various forms has been really functioning lazily in covering this, very few people, I think, know that just about every major disability rights organization filed legal briefs in support of Terri Schiavo. The problem here has been a systemic failure, particularly of the media. The polls, for example, most Americans agree with the husband, et cetera, and with the court's decisions. But the phrasing of the questions are, for example, she is in without any kind of cognition. She's on life support. She was never on life support. It was just one feeding tube. So my concern has been that this is going to affect who knows how many people, including me, you, and other listeners. I don't know if you saw this front page story in the Times a few days ago. Increasingly, you know, there's talk of living wills. Increasingly, many hospitals and bioethics committees are ignoring living wills under the futility doctrine. They figure as professionals, they know better than what the patient wanted or what their relatives wanted. My advice, unsolicited to people, is get a durable power of attorney, not a living will. That means that you trust somebody to make those decisions for you. But I'm really, I cover a lot of stories. I am not part of the Christian right. I'm a Jewish atheist. I think I have a civil liberties record. And the disinformation that's come out of this, if we had time, I would give you a long list of the conflicts of interest of Michael Schiavo. Not only that he's living with another woman and has two children, he has violated a long list of regulations in the state of Florida for a guardian. He's been her guardian. And the judge in this case, George Greer, the circuit court judge, on whose ruling all of the rest of these decisions have been made, has ignored all of these violations. And as for the judge's determination that Terri Schiavo is in a persistent vegetative state, there's a very interesting court record exchange when he made that decision. There were testifying had been five neurologists. Two were appointed by the parents of Terri Schiavo, two by Michael Schiavo, and one by the judge. And it was 3-2. Three said she is, two said she is not in a persistent vegetative state. So at the time, her guardian ad litem, Terri Schiavo's guardian, said to the judge, but that's not clear and convincing evidence. State of Florida means clear and convincing evidence. That's a high standard. The judge was not interested in. Just as he refused to consider under a testimony under oath from one of her best friends, and I covered this one a year and a half ago, she and Terry were watching a documentary on the Karen Ann Quinlan case. As Michael Schiavo says, they were as well. And Schiavo said, Terry said, I don't want to be in a state like that. Her friend says just the opposite. What I'm saying here is Ralph Nader said, this case is rife with doubt. So one of the things missing has been due process, the basis of our whole system.
All right, so Hentoff is pointing out, and as I stated before, there's a lot of contradictions that he points out in his writings on this issue that he has written about over the years. But the corporate media played their role in not informing the populace. And then you have these particular cynical entities with their own particular agendas. And then a populace that's so gumpified and so downtrodden intellectually that they're only concerned with their non-class type of agenda and you know, program and stuff, that it's all fractured out. And the masses of people are not on any form of a right to live type of program, because we live in a society that's against our basic rights and humanity. But, you know, Hentoff wrote a book, or a number of books, but one is called The War on the Bill of Rights. And in that, he goes into how two nights after the September 11th attack, the Senate swiftly by voice vote, after 30 minutes of debate, attached to a previously written appropriations bill an amendment making it easier for the government to wiretap computers of terrorism suspects without having to go to various courts to get multiple search warrants. The bipartisan bill was introduced by Senators Orrin Hatch, Republican of Utah, and Dianne Feinstein, Democrat of California. Terrorism, quote-unquote, was not defined. That was the beginning of the Steamroller. Attorney General John Ashcroft then got his way with his originally titled Anti-Terrorism Act of 2001, which coolly contradicted the earnest assertions of the President and the Secretary of Defense that necessarily security measures would not violate our fundamental liberties because our freedom is what we are fighting for. The final legislation passed the Senate on October 25th by a vote of 98-1, with only Russ Feingold, Democrat of Wisconsin, dissenting. In the House, the bill passed 356-266. Now, the reason why I mention this, and he goes on deeper into his particular book, is that he exposes the collaboration that goes on within the Senate and the whole justice system that basically, by de facto, did nothing to raise up to, quote-unquote, protect our so-called Bill of Rights in this society. And as we all know, the corporate media has played their role in not exposing these facts, just like they have in others. Now, at a certain point in time, one, like Nat Hentoff and others, have to realize that you can't depend on this system to defend our rights. It's going to take us to organize amongst ourselves to defend our rights for life. And it's not going to be within the confines of a Michael Savage, Bill O'Reilly, corporate media, Tom DeLay, congressional vote, invisible kingdoms in the sky, and all that other type of stuff. That's not a right to life movement. That's a right to confusion, despair, and death. Hold on a sec. Well, that's just going to about wrap it up for Slade tonight. It's clear that we're going to have to use all corners of our mind to dissect this. Otherwise, we're going to stay in a vegetative state, which is where those who are part of this market order, a market order that privileges for the masses of people throughout this country and the world, is their right to destroy us physically, intellectually, holistically, in every other way under the sun. Until we come to grips with what we're dealing with and deal with them, well, we'll all be Terry Schiavo. Until the next time, slave. Out.